Today's episode is going to be a really cool episode. We have a former major face in the Pistons community. You guys will remember him as soon as you see him. Let's go ahead and just get right into it on today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel, at Locked On Pistons. We are on our way to 5,000 subscribers. Or if you listen to one of the podcast platforms, which I know many of you are, you can go down to the bottom of whatever podcast platform you listen to this on and leave us a five-star review. Both those ways are the best ways to support the podcast. Just to give you guys a little update, I have chosen the fan that I'm going to be bringing on for the fan joins episode coming this Saturday. If you want to be on one of the future episodes, again, we're going to be doing this every week for the rest of the offseason. You guys can continue to send in your favorite or best Piston fandom story to try to get selected by a half pick this week's. I think it's a super dope story. I think you guys are really going to like it. So stay tuned for that episode coming this weekend. But I'm really excited for today's episode. We have a former Pistons broadcaster, analyst, whatever you want to call it. You guys are going to recognize him as soon as he gets brought up. I remember watching him all the time growing up as a kid with the Pistons. I think you guys are going to recognize him immediately. We are joined by Ryan Field, who is now with ABC New York. Ryan, I told you a little bit before we started that I'm not going to lie. It's not many times on the podcast that I'm giddy and like a little nervous. this one, I'm definitely a little giddy because, like I said, I remember watching you every day growing up, man. It's so surreal to have you on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Happy to be here, Koo. And, you know, we should point out to the listeners that when you said it, you used to watch me as a kid, I said, now, wait a minute. I want you to think very carefully when you say how far back we're talking, because I didn't want to feel as old as the hills here. But you were very delicate in saying it was just a few years ago that you were watching me on the Pistons telecast. So it made me feel that much better coming on Locked On Pistons today. And look, I mean, the reality is I covered the team from 2003 to 2013. I was there for so much of the good and, frankly, too much of the bad.
Yeah.
The back end of my time there covering the Pistons, but so many good memories, and I'm happy to come on today and talk to y'all about them.
Absolutely, man. I really appreciate it for real. So on the podcast, we're going to talk about some of his favorite memories and moments from the time with the Pistons. We're going to talk about how he got into it, how it was covering the Pistons, and then obviously we'll get his thoughts on the current team, its future. They have their face of the franchise now, Kay Cunningham. We'll talk about all that later on, but first, I want to talk with you. Just how did you get into this? I see that you went to Michigan State.
Yes, sir.
How did you get into this career, and how did you figure out that this is what you wanted to do and eventually get with the Pistons?
Well, I knew at a young age that I wasn't good enough to play sports for any team, whether at high school level. So I said, look, if I'm going to get involved in sports, it's going to have to be in another platform. So in high school, I started working for the high school paper at Troy Athens. Go Red Hawks. I was the sports editor my entire 4 years for the Scarlet Letter there at Troy Athens, and then went to Michigan State and tried my hand at radio, and then went into television doing stuff on campus for Michigan State. And despite people telling me that I have the face for radio, I decided that TV was ultimately the best venture for me to go into. And one thing led to another, and I started off working in Lansing at the Fox affiliate up there, and then went down to Fox 2 in Detroit, WJBK, worked there for 3 years. And then I got a job offer at Fox Sports Detroit, and they, of course, are the home of the Pistons, Red Wings, and Tigers, as you well know. And they made me the sideline reporter for the Pistons, which, as a kid who growing up in Detroit, going to games at the Silver Dome, I mean, they've been my favorite team, and they still are to this day. They've been my favorite team since I was probably 6 or 7 years old. So to get a chance to fly in the team plane and cover the team for 10 years and be there for the championship and so many good memories was just frankly a dream come true. And I sit here and smile because, as I told you, I've worked at Fox Sports 1 in L.A., and now I'm here at ABC in New York. And it basically feels like two lifetimes ago that I was covering the team. But even now that I sit here and think about it for the first time in a long time, it just makes me smile to think of how many good memories that I have during those 10 years. And really just a special time for me, both personally and professionally as a broadcaster, to get a chance to have that kind of access to the players and coaches. And it was just a really spectacular time of my life.
So one of the things I think is actually pretty cool while you were talking about all that is that you said that you covered them from 2003 to 2013. And one of the things I think is really cool about that is that because of that, I feel like people from multiple different generations will know who you are and will recognize you. So like a few podcasts ago, and it's something that we, ever since the Teal came back, I believe it was a few days ago, the Teal got revealed. And a lot of
nice hat, by the way.
Oh, appreciate it. This is my favorite hat. Absolutely favorite hat. But some of the older generation aren't big fans of the Teal, and they have their own reasons for it. Then there's the younger generation, which I'm a part of, that really likes the Teal. And it's a little bit of a war going on, I guess. But I feel like just since that's been like a topic lately, I think it's super cool because 2003, the next year, the Pistons win the championship. So you're there for those guys who were able to actually watch. I was a real young kid at that time, so I don't have many like exact memories. I have very distant memories of seeing them win. But that, I would say, like for people around my age, they don't remember a ton of that. So you were there for those guys a little bit older than me, but then also people around my age will remember you. Like I said, from all the time, from I'd say right after the Chauncey Billups trade with Allen Iverson, all the way to Greg Monroe and Rodney Stuckey. Like they'll remember you from that era. I believe at the very beginning of Andre Drummond's era with the Pistons too. Yep. So I think it's really cool because like I said, I just feel like people from all over ages will recognize you. Even to this day, like I know you say that you're in ABC New York now. I feel like all of us, when we look at you, when we see you, we're going to think, oh, that's our Detroit, or the guy who covered the Pistons all those years. So I think that's really dope.
Thanks, dude. I really appreciate that. And look, no matter where I am in the world, no matter where my career takes me, Detroit will always be home. And I can promise you that the Pistons will always be my favorite team, number one, even above my Michigan State Spartans. So I always pay very close attention to what's going on with those guys. And to hear you say those words makes me feel old, yes. to hear the Rodney Stuckeys and the Greg Monroe, some of the legends of Pistons history. But yeah, dude, it was, like I said, just such a cool time in my life. And really, as a kid growing up in Troy and going to games as a kid, just like I said, it was a dream come true. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I was there for a lot of the good in Detroit sports, you know, the Tigers making those World Series runs, the Red Wings winning two Stanley Cups from in 02 and 08 when I was there working. And it, you know, there's just so many good things. I mean, obviously the Lions are what they are, but I feel like ever since I left town, there hasn't been a lot good to talk about, and a lot of people are blaming me for that, and I'm happy to take that blame. But you got to think that the better days are ahead, specifically with the Pistons. And I finally think that they're on the right track, and that's kind of all we can hope for here at this point. I know we're going to talk about that later on in the podcast, but yeah, it's pretty cool to think about, and I will always be a Detroit kid through and through. I can promise you that.
Absolutely, man. That's great to hear. By the way, before we move on, I went to Chippewa Valley. It's a little bit farther away.
Okay.
From Troy, Athens.
East side. What up?
Yeah, we used to play you guys a few times. I remember scrimmaging you guys in basketball a few times. I can't lie to you. Troy Athens and us, we didn't get along very well.
Well, hopefully we can put that rivalry aside for the end of the podcast, at least for the next 30 minutes or so.
You're all good. I'm just messing with you. All right. When we come back, we'll talk about some of Ryan's favorite moments and favorite memories while covering the Pistons from, again, 2003 to 2013. Make sure you guys stay tuned for that. I can't wait. But first, I have to tell you guys a little bit about one of our sponsors, Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a new flavor. Like I always tell you guys, they're coming out with flavors all the time. It's delicious, indulgent cookie dough. Covered in chocolate, that's right, Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to their new favorite cookie dough chunk Puffs bar that has a light, chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. All of the joys of eating a cookie dough without the hassle of making it. Plus, it's healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories, and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Run to Built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It will be a perfect treat, or you can find a really good hiding place in the house and detour them to yourself, although I do not recommend doing that. Like all Built bars, the new cookie dough chunk puff is covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate-covered cookie dough with light, fluffy texture? Absolutely amazing. You're going to love this new flavor. Whether you need a snack for your workout, a late night treat, or just need to grab a quick bite, Built is the perfect protein bar. They taste better than a candy bar, and they're better for you. Ditch the calories, fat, and sugar. Go grab yourself a Built bar. And like I tell you guys all the time, make sure you're constantly checking out Built.com because they're constantly coming out with new limited time flavors. And I can't promise you guys how much longer these flavors will be around. They're constantly going around. So again, go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Again, go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15 and get the 15% off your order. Built bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. So I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to our YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button, Lockdown Pistons, or if you listen to one of the podcast platforms, go down below, leave a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you listen to this on. Both of those ways are great ways to support the podcast. I would really appreciate it. All right, Ryan, let's go back a little bit farther. I'm sorry, I keep saying going back. I know you don't want me to make it seem like it's too old.
Choose your words carefully here, Koo. Choose your words very carefully, my friend.
In the beginning era of the going to work team, which you got to cover back in 2003, obviously they won the championship, and that's going to be a major moment for any fan, for fans, anyone who covers the team. Even if you're not a fan of the team, like some of the beat writers, obviously if you're around for a championship team, I think that's always a pretty cool moment to have. But just outside of winning the championship, is there any moments or memories that you have with any of those five starters or anything that you can think of with Ben, Chauncey, Tayshaun, Rashid, Rip, anything that jumps off to you or jumps out to you that you kind of hold on to and kind of remember about them? That's pretty cool.
Well, first thing that jumps off at you is just, what a cohesive unit that team was. And I thought it was interesting that Kendrick Perkins put out that tweet the other day saying that team, the going to work Pistons, could basically beat any team in any era because they were one of the greatest defensive teams in history. And he's true. Go back and look at some of the box scores from that season. And even in the playoff run against, like, especially those scores against the Pacers. If either team cracked 80, that was a huge accomplishment. But outside of just the camaraderie and how cool they were, I kind of think one of my favorite memories was what was set in place the year before when Tayshaun kind of came on in the playoffs against Orlando, having to guard Tracy McGrady before they ended up losing to the Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2003 when they got swept. But you can kind of see like the seeds kind of being sown and them starting to grow. You had Rip in place. You had Chauncey in place from that previous offseason. Then you see Tayshaun come in as a rookie and start to make a name for himself. Ben Wallace came in that trade for Grant Hill, which at the time everybody was like, who the hell is Ben Wallace? And then, he quickly became, the backbone of Detroit basketball. So once you saw Tayshaun kind of taking those steps in that series against Orlando and Tracy McGrady, the season starts in 03-04, and you're thinking like, okay, like this team obviously made it to the Eastern Conference Finals the year before, but they got swept. They're basically bringing the same team back. You got Mehmet Okur, and you've got the Corliss Williamsons. You got a few guys here, a nice bench that, they're like, how are you going to take the next step? So you're kind of thinking at some point they're going to make a trade, and there had been some rumors that they were going after Rashid Wallace. And, back then there was no Twitter, so you're not sitting there checking, you're not checking the retweets and scrolling through Twitter and refreshing for Woj bombs or Shams bombs and things like that. It was you obviously don't remember this time, Koo, but that's how it used to be back in the day. We had to listen to like sports talk radio, and I'll never forget, I was outside the Chrysler Arena practice facility. We were getting in ready to go in and do a story on the Michigan basketball team. And I was listening to WDFN 1130. That was before 97.1 The Ticket came along. And they were like, Rashid Wallace is coming to the D. Like, that was their breaking news story. And I just couldn't believe it. And especially when you look up who they, look up who they gave up in that trade. It was the steal of a century to get a player with the talent of a caliber of Rashid Wallace. And he came in and just changed the whole thing and brought a whole new attitude to the team. And, I loved how he played the first half of his first game. And technically the trade wasn't even approved by the NBA. And then he sat the second half and everybody's like, wait a minute, why the hell is Rashid not playing in the second half? Oh yeah, the trade wasn't fully approved yet by the league. So that was really funny how that all played out. So that was obviously a funny moment, but yeah, man. And just seeing him take that step and just watching him grow. And then of course, you get to the finals against the Lakers. They win in game one. They probably should have won game two. It was a Hail Mary from Kobe just inside half court. at Staples Center that sends the game to overtime, and then they lose in OT, and that's why so many people call it a five-game sweep to this day. But one of my other favorite moments when I think back to this, that time, especially during the finals that year, and it's a very obscure reference, but it was that season, or it might have been the season prior, when the Pistons started using the torches, right? And back then, you know, you're talking 18 years ago. I mean, that was not commonplace in sports leagues like it is now, where you see all these crazy intros and everything else. So the Pistons, very much ahead of their time when it came to in-arena production and getting most for the fan value and everything else, fan experience, I should say. And I remember I was sitting on press row with all of the beat writers and the TV people from L.A., so you got the LA Times and right on down the line. And we're all sitting there behind the basket at the Palace, and the torches are going off. And these guys have their camera phones out. And back then it was like flip phones, you know, and they're taking pictures, mouths open, never seen anything like it before in their life. And the building literally shook during those introductions in game three. And I'm getting goosebumps now just talking about it. And it was just such a cool time to be there, not only as a fan, but as a professional, and just to witness basketball at its highest level. They win all three games against the Lakers, and it was just a remarkable night. I remember getting sprayed with champagne. Campbell, why am I blanking on his first name? Eldon Campbell, spraying the champagne in the locker room. And I was getting, you know, hit with the champagne. You know, as a kid, like I said, who grew up watching the team, you're sitting there thinking, like, is this real life? Am I really in a Pistons championship locker room celebration? I remember watching the Bad Boys when I was just a kid celebrating, and here I am getting interviews, talking to Kid Rock in the locker room and doing all this stuff. Just so many cool memories. And then, of course, they trade for Antonio McDyess the year after that. And McDyess was probably my favorite player. I really loved Chauncey, too. Those two were probably 1A and 1B. I loved all the guys, but if I had to pick two favorites, those guys would probably be it. Just always so cool to me. Always wanted to do interviews. And just McDyess was just like just an all-around good guy. And to this day, I feel so bad that they couldn't win another ring. If nothing else, for Antonio McDyess, who had the terrible knee problems later in his career, kind of resurrected his career with the Pistons. And, you know, they frankly should have won. And Chauncey will tell you this to a man. They should have won probably two more titles, frankly, because that team was so talented. And really, Koo, in the grand scheme of things, that team was labeled underachievers when they won the championship, or overachievers, I should say, when they beat the Lakers, because nobody thought they were going to beat the Lakers. People were thinking they were going to get swept in four games. They'd be lucky to win one. They went ahead with the five-game sweep, and they're labeled overachievers. Well, as their run unfolds and they make it to six straight Eastern Conference Finals, then you look back at the big picture. And then now they're labeled underachievers because they probably should have won one, maybe two more titles during that run. So it's not often a team, if you look at the scope of history, especially in the NBA, where a team can have one label in one perspective one year and then several years later have a completely different perspective on them. So they went from overachievers to underachievers. And the fact that they weren't able to get a ring for Antonio McDyess, still very disappointed about that to this day. I was there in San Antonio when they lost game seven. They were up, I think up by eight late in the third quarter, and Antonio McDyess was playing his ass off. And then LB subbed him out for Rashid in the fourth quarter, which I guess you couldn't argue because he went back to his starters, but McDyess was playing so well in that game. And, you know, there's one they might want to have back. Maybe they win a second title. You know, the LeBron game in 07 when he goes off and makes all, I mean, that's still one of the worst moments in his history when he scores 25 points in a row and you're just sitting there like, will somebody just put this guy on his ass, please? Like, he's just open lane right down, dunk after dunk, hitting these incredible threes, falling out of bounds. And not to be overlooked, in that game, Chris Webber was so good, and they probably should have won that game in overtime, didn't. That ultimately could have led to another title in 07 because then they lost to the Cavs in game six and got eliminated. So there's a lot of what-if moments. Of course, the Robert Horry shot from game five, from game five in 05. So you look back at some of these moments where you're just like, man, that team was so close to winning, you know, one or two, maybe even three more titles. I mean, six straight runs to the Eastern Conference Finals is pretty impressive no matter what era you're playing in. And given what the rules were back then and, you know, how tough it was to score, and this team could just, as Kendrick Perkins pointed out, could just play with anybody. And, you know, it was just fascinating to watch unfold, but ultimately disappointing that they did not win more than they did.
Well, I think, well, first I want to say about the fire being the horns, whatever. When I was a kid, my very first Pistons game I went to, my aunt surprised me on my birthday. And she took me to the game where Chauncey, his first game back at the Palace when he got traded to Denver. Yep. And I was there. I hadn't been in no games, and the fire went off. I was scared. It terrified the hell out of me. I did not know there was going to be fire.
And understandably so. It would definitely get your attention.
And you can feel the heat for real. Like, no matter where you sit, you can feel it. Yeah, so it real scared me when I was a kid. So that's, I just wanted to make that comment. But two, I think it's pretty cool though that, and it kind of speaks to their dominance though as well, that, you know, that they had such a long run and such a long prime as a squad that they can start out as someone who was an overachiever. And then by the time that they're at the end of their run, you look back and like, oh, well, actually they did it for so long and went to so many Eastern Conference finals. Maybe they're actually underachievers. I think it goes both ways. I've heard Chauncey, I think definitely Rip talk about before that they feel like they should have won one or two more. I think I heard Sheed say something even more crazy, like maybe three more or something. But
I mean, they were right there every year, dude. I mean,
they were right there.
You know, and Flip Saunders, you could argue for all their playoff failures, he kind of took them to a whole nother level offensively that they didn't have under LB. They found a whole new gear. And of course, Ben Wallace left after the 05 season, which was a huge void to fill. And they kind of had to reinvent themselves again. But yeah, I mean, look, you know, revisionist history can be whatever you want it to be, but they certainly should have won more than one. I think we can all agree on that.
Absolutely. So I want to ask you about one thing quickly. The Rasheed trade. So again, I was really young when this happened, but I think all of us know, even people who, heck, even were people who were born after that Rasheed even trade came in, like they're 18 now. That's crazy to think about. I just thought about that. That's insane.
Think about that for a minute. Let that sink in.
Yeah, that's insane. But I feel like everybody knows who Rasheed Wallace is. Everyone knows he's the technical foul king. He got teed up for staring at a referee. We know all the fun, like the stories about Rasheed. But forget his play on the court. When he arrived in the locker room, like, did he bring instantly a more fun, a more vibrant, outspoken, like kind of vibe to the locker room as soon as you got there?
So there's one story that stands out in particular. Well, two actually, because you had the Garen Sheed, right, which was game two, Eastern Conference Finals 04, once they lost the first game, and he guaranteed they would win game two. And he had that thing, you can put it on the front page, back page, I don't care, we will win game two. And of course, Detroit Free Press, Detroit News, Garen Sheed, you know, Rasheed guarantees they're going to win game two. And they did win game two. I'm pretty sure that was the Tayshaun Block game. It was game two in 04.
I believe so.
And that was the one that kind of clinched Rasheed's guarantee. And then they went ahead and went on to beat the Pacers. So, but yes, that's one moment that stands out. But he was, to your point, so colorful, even more so in the locker room. So how it works with the media is, and for the life of me, I'll never understand this, but the players always like to shower before they talk to the media. And if it were me, I'd rather just get it over with. Even if I'm in my jersey, go get cleaned up, shower up, and then go home. But for whatever reason, these guys want to shower first, put their clothes on. So we're all just kind of standing in the locker room waiting for all these guys, and nobody's in a rush to help us out because they don't care about the media. So it was always just such a slow process. And Rasheed always had these big, I think it was before Beats by Dr. Dre, maybe they were, I can't remember, but he'd put them up on his head above his ears, but the audio, he had the volume turned up so loud that you could hear the song clear as day. And he would have them perched up on top of his head, and he would turn around and he would look at the media throng that was at his locker. And he would turn around and he'd be like, all right, MFers, shoot, I got 2 minutes. And so there was always like this little bit of trepidation, like who wants to ask the first question? Because Sheed was always like so salty, even though for the most part that was an act because he couldn't have been a nicer guy. But yeah, I'll never forget that. All right, MFers, shoot, I got 2 minutes. And so you would just hurry up and ask the questions. And every now and then he would give you a very well thought out, you know, an answer that would be like, okay, that was a great thoughtful answer to this question. But this is also the same guy who did the both teams played hard routine for however many questions he answered in the press conference that day. So, you know, there was that side of him as well, that he could be, you know, a little bit of a knucklehead, frankly, even covering him. And he could be frustrating to deal with, not only from a referee standpoint, but from a teammate standpoint, from a media standpoint. Chauncey was just doing an interview the other day where he was talking about how he would, there was one instance where he purposely had the ref give Rashid a technical because he knew that would get him engaged in the game. And you just knew as soon as Rashid got teed up, he was going to hit like his next five shots, including like a backbreaking three coming down on the fast break. He'd be trailing and they drop it off to him and he hit a big three to cap off like a 12-0 run. Palace would go crazy. And you just knew it was, you know, blouses at that point. It was ball game. And Chauncey told a funny story about how he's like, you're going to let the ref, you're going to let Rashid talk to you like that? You should tee him up. And like basically coerced the referee to call a technical on Rashid so that he, that would get him engaged in the game. But that was part of the Rashid Wallace experience, is that sometimes he would be dialed in. Other times he would be kind of a space cadet, lackadaisical, not engaged, lazy passes, whatever, whatever. But make no mistake, he is one of the all-time most talented big men to ever play in this game. And he was a stretch four long before there were stretch fours. And, you know, maybe he doesn't get enough credit as he deserves because he was such a knucklehead. But that dude could play, and anybody that knows anything about basketball will tell you the same thing.
Absolutely, man. So I have a quick story that I want to add on to that, and then we'll move on to the next segment. So I was credentialed for the 1920 season. I was actually able to get in the locker room. That, what you just said, it 100% was true, and it used to get on my nerves so bad.
About waiting for them to get dressed?
Yes. Yeah, I was like, I had the same thought as you. I'd be like, dude, wouldn't you guys want to, like, get it over with instantly instead of, like, having to wait and prolong it? So I'm like, dude. And Reggie Jackson was the absolute worst with it. Reggie would – I feel like he wasn't even really taking a shower, man. I feel like he would just perfectly sit back there and just wait for as long as possible
and that's
to come
the
back.
Thing, dude, like, I would have my uniform on just waiting to get it over with. You know, as soon as the media comes in, I'm like, all right, let's just get this done with. But, yeah, I mean, that really tested your patience. And I wish I could have all the minutes back in my life that I've waited on athletes to do interviews. I'd probably live another 6 years, Coon. There's no question about that. A lot of time wasted waiting for athletes to get dressed and do interviews. And you're always on their time. And I get it. Yeah. That's part of the deal. But that doesn't make it any less frustrating.
No, yeah. But I had to add on to that. Because that was, as soon as you said it, I was like,
I'm glad you got to experience what we experienced. I'm glad you got to see that firsthand.
Yeah, I was like, man, Reggie, come on, dude. Like, and then there'd be some other players, like D. Rose was there that year, and he used to always – his thing was, and it was super cool, I used to talk about it, is that he refused to do any interview unless he had all his jewelry on. So he'd have to make sure he had his watch on, his earrings in. But every day, I kid you not, it would take him like 5 to 10 minutes just to get his necklace on. He would sit there for the longest time trying to figure out how to get his necklace on, and we'd all just be sitting there. But it was cool. It was cool. It was fun. It's definitely a story to have about the experience of the locker room.
I'm glad you had a chance to experience it firsthand, my friend.
All right. So when we come back, we'll talk about the current Pistons team, their future. How does Ryan feel about Cade Cunningham and the young core that Troy Weaver has put together in Detroit? Stay tuned for that. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our sponsors. All right. Thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. Or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, go down below whatever platform you listen to this on. Leave us a 5-star review. Both those ways are great ways to support the podcast. And in case you guys missed it earlier, I'm going to give you guys an update one more time. I did pick the fan that will be coming on Saturday to talk about the Pistons. If you guys want to find a way to get on there in one of the episodes in the future, continue sending me your favorite or best Piston fandom stories. I'll continue to pick the most interesting one each week, and we'll have you on the podcast. All right, Ryan. So like you mentioned a little earlier, you were a part of the great times in Detroit. And the bad times in Detroit. And the bad
really
times.
Bad times, dude.
The bad times seem to have lasted a tad too long.
They haven't won a playoff game since 2008.
Yeah, it's been a little while. It's been a while. But
crazy.
It seems like times may be finally turning in their favor. Troy Weaver came to the team with a team full of Blake Griffin, Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond, all these type of guys. And in a matter of 2 years, he has completely flipped the roster. No one from that roster he inherited is even on the squad anymore. He now has a young core of Kay Cunningham, Jane Ivey, Jalen Duren, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Stewart, Killian Hayes, Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Livers, on and on. He has a young core of like seven to nine guys on this team. When he took over, the young core basically was Luke Kennard and Bruce Brown. So he's done a heck of a job to bring in some more young talent and make this future look a little bit more brighter. How do you feel about this squad that's being led really by Kay Cunningham moving forward now?
Well, I had to sit there and I was reflecting as you were making that long intro to the question and touching on so many good points, that just how much has changed in such a short amount of time under Troy Weaver's direction, and really how much the narrative has changed surrounding the team, especially on a national perspective, where you have guys like J.J. Redick and, you know, Kendrick Perkins saying that they won the draft, and J.J. Redick talking about how they're going to be one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference in the next couple of years. And, you know, they're getting a lot of love, and deservedly so. And Troy Weaver deserves all the credit, all the kudos, and then some, because what he has done in a short amount of time, I don't know if it's ever been done in the NBA before. I'm not that much of a historian to be able to tell you that much, but it is almost unprecedented how he's been able to flip this roster in a short amount of time and work wonders with the salary cap and the dead money. And he makes these moves and then he makes these trades, and you're scratching your head going, well, what the hell just happened? And then you have to wait 48 hours for like the second part of it to make sense. And, you know, he's often playing chess when everybody else is playing checkers, is kind of what it feels like. And, you know, I feel like he fleeced the Knicks on that deal on draft day for Jalen Duren. You know, even getting Alec Burks was a nice pickup. I mean, Burks was one of the Knicks. He's probably their third best player last year. And, you know, now you got him coming off the bench, maybe starting just to add some shooting, which was much needed. You get Nerlens Noel to, you know, mentor some of the young bigs, because they definitely need that. You got so many young big guys on the team. And I think what he's done, there's a reason why this guy was so highly sought after and considered one of the bright young minds in the NBA. And it's like, who's going to be the first team to hire Troy Weaver? And, you know, he turned down other positions in the league. And finally, whatever Tom Gorris and company said to him to sell him on the deal, I'm sure a lot of this was a part of it. But they found a way to make it happen. And look, I'll say that Tom Gorris gets a lot of flack for how his regime started with Stan Van Gundy. Total disaster. They greenlit the Blake Griffin trade, which, had Blake Griffin not gotten hurt at the end of that magical season when he hurt his knee with like 2 weeks to go, they had almost made it to the playoffs. You know, they wouldn't have fallen down and had to face the Bucks in the first round, because they lost like a bunch of games after he got hurt late in the year, that they probably would have had like a six seed, and maybe they win a couple games and maybe we're kind of looking at that differently. But I think everything happened for a reason, that, you know, it just unraveled under SVG. He had to go. Should have never been the GM on top of being the head coach. And Gorris admitted, he's like, look, I'm a businessman. I've made mistakes running a business when I was young and getting involved. And, you know, you kind of learn as you go. And he admitted he did the same thing with the Pistons. He made a mistake. He fixed it. And now look. And I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done, for bringing in Weaver and, you know, the other guys in the front office, and they've revamped the scouting department and the analytics and everything else. I think they've really done a first class job in getting this thing turned around, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for this as well.
Absolutely, both of them. Like you said, for Gores to be able to recognize, because remember, at the end of the year, after he literally got rid of Stan Van Gundy the following offseason, like 3 months after he made the trade for Blake Griffin. So he didn't even really even let him see out the move that he made, because he realized that we need to move in a different direction, and made the move for Dwayne Casey. Obviously brings in Weaver, who's done a tremendous job. So both of those guys deserve some credit. I also feel like Gorris, now I feel like there's some things outside of the Pistons, and some people have some issues with it. Okay, fair enough. But I feel like as an owner, I do feel like sometimes he gets a little bit too much flack, because a lot of times that what people say they want their owner to do is don't get involved, be quiet, and just spend money, basically, is what they want. And I feel like he's done both those things. When it's time to spend money, when it's time to do what it takes to win, he wants to try to win. Now, it hasn't resulted in success. Like, people will say the Blake Griffin trade was a bad decision. Whichever way you land with that, that was an effort to win. He will do what he believes it takes to win. So I like that. And I also like the fact that he doesn't get too involved in basketball decisions. He trusts these guys in the front office. So
I mean, yeah, you hire a guy like Troy to run the show, and you know, you have the Arne Tellems and some other voices in that front office that no doubt have a say in things, but ultimately it's Troy's call. So yeah, I think they've done a great job of revamping the whole thing. And like we said, I think Gorris deserves a lot of credit for that. And I'm blanking on the guy he brought in to run basketball operations before Troy came in, who's still
part of Ed Stefanski.
Yeah, Big Ed Stefanski. So, you know, that was another good move because Stefanski, you know, had done great work with Memphis. So now he comes in and, you know, he's kind of helped oversee all this and another guy for Weaver to lean on. And, you know, you look at that front office, I mean, it's pretty stacked with good minds. And I think that's just another reason for Piston fans to feel good about the direction of the team.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So let me ask you specifically, Cade Cunningham, how excited are you to have Cade Cunningham be a Detroit Piston, be the leader of this comeback, this new younger era, the teal coming back with this new younger generation, the new young core? Cade Cunningham's the face of it. I feel like, personally, we've talked about it a ton on the podcast, obviously, that I don't feel like the Pistons could have gotten a better face for their franchise, a guy who's as mature off the court as he is on the court, a leader, a guy who knows what the right things to say, wants to help his teammates get better, all those things, and a guy who seems like he's absolutely bought into Detroit. We just had a podcast, the last episode I had a Houston Rockets member come on. We talked about the Rockets versus Pistons young core, and something I didn't mention on that episode that I should have mentioned is that I think it worked out perfectly for both teams because, to be honest, I think Jalen Green will last in Houston a long time, but Jalen Green, to me, it feels like a kind of guy who may have wanted out of Detroit after like 5 years for a different spot. I don't see that happening with Cade Cunningham. Cade Cunningham seems, and his whole crew, his trainer, has interacted himself or really put himself in the Pistons community, constantly interacting with everybody. They've completely bought into Detroit. Are you buying Cade Cunningham as the face of the Pistons franchise moving forward?
No question. And you hit the nail on the head with Jalen Green, who had some of those things to say about Detroit. I can't remember if it was before the draft. I think it was afterwards.
Yeah, it was after they didn't get
picked. And he was basically dogging the city of Detroit. And everybody that lives there were all like, okay, here's another person dogging Detroit who has no clue what the hell they're talking about. And then Cade Cunningham on draft night wears the sunglasses that are – I forget the name of them. The buffs that are specific to Detroit. And he just kind of had this Detroit attitude, Detroit swagger about him right from the jump. And I know there were a lot of Evan Mobley fans in that Pistons front office, including Troy himself, which, you know, would if it was solely up to him, would he have taken Evan Mobley? Maybe, because he was kind of a unicorn, a big man who can shoot and block shots and do all this stuff and run the floor, dribble, pass. I get that, but I think ultimately they are 1,000% happy with Cade Cunningham, and I think every Piston fan should be as well because of all the intangibles. And, you know, on top of what he brings on the court in terms of, you know, his playmaking ability, the thing I like about him the most is the game never seems too big for him. He's just always playing at this tempo and pace. He can slow things down. He doesn't seem to get rattled. He's kind of got this little edge to him. He's just like, yeah, whatever, man. Like, he doesn't really let anything bother him. And I think he is a guy that people will rally around in that locker room. And I think we've already seen that to a great extent last year as a rookie. He kind of already said, this is my team. And I loved him sitting courtside there in Vegas, cheering everybody on and just being a good leader. And then on top of that, you talk about how much he loves the city and what he's all the things he's brought to the city in terms of, you know, just a big name star who's embraced living there. Not since probably, you know, Grant Hill have you had a guy that was so highly acclaimed come in and then really embrace the city of Detroit. And I think, you know, this guy is only beginning. I mean, we're talking about him like he's a 6-year vet. He's only played 1 year. And he just put on 15 pounds of muscle in the offseason, needed to gain some weight. So that worked out great that he did that. I think that's going to help him take another step this year. He's going to be a little bit harder to defend, you know, maybe a little more work in the post now that he's got a little more size on him. So I think all of that is going to be beneficial to the Pistons and Cade Cunningham. And, you know, getting the star, as you know, Koo, is the hardest part in the NBA. And the Pistons have found their star. And now you've got all these other pieces that Troy has brought in that could be used in a trade later on down the road or whatever. But they've got so much more flexibility. They're going to have, you know, $65 million in cap space this offseason coming up next summer, I should say. So, you know, they just got so many things at their disposal. And as a fan, it's nice to say that things are finally, finally pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. One of the things that you mentioned, and we'll wrap up the podcast, that I kind of want to hammer in is that he can go either way with this young core now. He has, like you mentioned, you can grow these guys. They have the flexibility to add pieces in free agency. Or again, like you mentioned, the Pistons have done, I think, a really good job of having role players for the past 10 years. Like, they've had a bunch of good role players. If you look at a lot of the contenders, now you'll see them former Pistons all over former contenders.
All over the place, right.
Yeah, Andre Drummond, Bruce Brown, Luke Kennard, Marcus Morris, Markieff Morris. Like, you'll see all of them scattered
Reggie
everywhere.
Jackson, how good. I mean, he's been great for the Clippers in the playoffs.
Exactly. So you see a bunch of role players who are really good. But in Detroit, they were asked to be more than they were. And like you mentioned, it's really hard to get that star. They finally have that with a bunch of role players who can, like you mentioned, can be used in a trade down the line to get another co-star with Cade, or you can develop with him and maybe Jaden Ivey becomes that co-star, or maybe Sadiq Bey or someone else, or maybe a top pick in next year's draft. So they're extremely flexible and they have so many different ways that they can go with this rebuild. But like you mentioned, I think all of us that are fans of the Pistons are extremely excited and happy that Cade Cunningham is the face of this franchise moving forward. Last question I ask you real quick before we wrap it up. Who's your favorite Piston right now?
Right now on the team currently? Oh, boy. I mean, it's got to be Cade, dude. I just love everything about him. I already just waxed poetically about him a couple minutes ago. I mean, he just is everything you want a superstar to be. And I say superstar because I think he's well on his way to being one. Yeah. And I think the Pistons got lucky on draft night. They were due for a lucky bounce with the ping pong balls. They got it. And now they finally have their path paved here now to take the next step into contention and hopefully be back in the playoffs here soon. Because I got news for you, Koo. When I was covering the team in 2008 and they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals, I believe they got swept by the Cavaliers. They did in 2008. If you told me I'd be sitting here 14 years later on a podcast, first thing I'd be saying is, what the hell's a podcast? And if you'd have told me the Pistons had not won a single freaking playoff game in 14 years, I never would have believed you, because we were coming off a string of six straight Eastern Conference Finals, yet here we are. And it's just remarkable. And hopefully that darn streak comes to an end here sometime soon.
Yeah, hopefully soon, because it's not a good streak to be associated with, that's for sure.
No doubt about it.
Thank you, Ryan, for coming on, man. I really appreciate it, man. This is a lot of fun. Make sure you guys go follow him over on Twitter at RyanFieldABC. Again, thank you so much for coming on. This was seriously a lot of fun. Thank you, guys.
Let's do it again during the season, buddy, when hopefully we're talking about the first place Pistons. How's that sound?
No, yeah, absolutely. I'll have you back on. I absolutely will have a lot of fun with that. So I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, give us a 5-star review on one of the podcast platforms or subscribe to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. I really appreciate you guys for listening. I hope you guys really enjoyed this episode. I know I did recording it. Keep sending in your guys' favorite Piston fandom story to try to get on one of the future episodes. But anyways, until the next episode, I'll see you guys later. Peace out, everybody, and stay safe.